This conference will now be recorded.
So thanks all for joining us. This is the Governance Committee meeting for the Springfield Development Code Update Project. It's Thursday, June 4th. And I prepared the agenda. I didn't have a packet prepared. This was kind of called together fairly quickly. And Christina and I were just alluding to some questions we're having, mainly directed at how the state is drafting the administrative rules for implementing House Bill 2001 and how that will impact our development code update project. So I'm primarily going to be talking about the phase one residential development code part of the project and how we're proceeding on that, related to my involvement at the state level on both the Rules Advisory Committee for House Bill 2001 and the Technical Advisory Committee for the Model Code Development for House Bill 2001. So those meetings have been continued, as you can see in the agenda. So I was going to give you kind of some brief update on what has been happening at those committee meetings, where, what direction it looks like the state is taking, and then ask for the committee's input on basically two questions. And primarily it is, if what I'm going to present talking about the direction the state's going is a concern for Springfield from the committee's perspective, and if it is a concern, how we should react to it, change course potentially, and timing of the phase one residential code process. Christine, I'll just check in with you. Is there anything you need to say, or do we, I can't remember, do we need to go around and do conflicts of interest statements at this meeting?
Yeah, we need to announce potential conflicts of interest at this meeting. And again, it's just if you own property in Springfield or have another type of potential conflict of interest, then you just state you have a potential conflict of interest because you own residential property in the city of Springfield. And then that's the end of it, unless you have another type of potential conflict of interest. And again, a reminder is a potential conflict of interest is any business or personal interests that you have where your recommendations or directions or decisions on this project could impact you or a business that you're associated with or one of your direct relatives or their business.
And is it true that it's in this committee, it's not possible to have an actual conflict of interest? Is that correct?
Correct. The guidance that we have from the state is that this committee makes no final decisions on adopting any ordinances or any formal recommendations that have binding authority. And so therefore every conflict is a potential conflict.
So if we could just start with Councillor Moe, if you don't mind making a statement on the record for that.
I have no conflict of interest.
And Councillor Van Gordon?
I have a potential conflict of interest. I'm a property owner in Springfield, and this is my favorite part of the entire meeting.
Thank you. Commissioner, go ahead, Councillor Moe.
Let me go back on that. I do own property in Springfield, but it's commercial, and we're talking about housing, so I sort of thought I don't have a conflict of interest. So whichever way.
Do you own any residential property or house?
No residential. Well, I own my house. Okay.
So the guidance that we got was even personal. Our personal houses could be included in the way that they've interpreted those rules. So.
So I do have a potential conflict of interest.
Yes.
Okay.
Under the way the state interpreted that.
All right. Thank you.
And Commissioner McGinley.
I have no potential conflict of interest.
And Commissioner Bergen.
A potential conflict of interest being a homeowner, in Springfield, and I'm a practicing residential realtor in Springfield as well.
Thank you. So I'll just jump into a quick update on the administrative rules process at the state level. As I mentioned, I'm on both the Rules Advisory Committee and the Technical Advisory Committee. Basically, and I'll try and keep it short, I have some of the language pulled up we can look at if we need to, but in a nutshell, in my words, basically the state is looking at mandating that cities, and us falling into the category of a large city under the legislation, requiring us to allow all middle housing types, basically, or I'll focus on triplexes and fourplexes at this point, which are two types of the middle housing types, on basically any lot that would allow a single family home. I'm going to pull, and as you'll recall, I presented to you a while back, and I know Sophie, you had asked for this map, and I don't know if you saw, I finally sent it to you this morning. I know it's been weeks or almost a month since you asked for it. And I can provide this again via PDF. So this was a map I presented to you months ago when the legislation came on board, how the city of Springfield with the draft development code for residential, we were looking at allowing triplexes and fourplexes based on lot size to stay within our density range. And as a reminder, so these on this map, the highlighted green lots would allow a triplex. The highlighted orange lots would allow a fourplex, and that's based on lot size, and that's based on our existing density, which, as a reminder, and this is only in our low density residential zone, we're focusing on that, which is primarily where the majority of our single family homes are. Our low density residential zone allows a range of a minimum of 6 units per acre gross and up to 14 units per acre. And just to give you some sense of the high end, it's not reflected on this map, but in the city of Springfield overall, our highest density residential zone, excluding any mixed use development zones, but our high density residential zones allow up to 42 units per acre. That's the highest residential density. So as it stands today, the state is, the draft rules would allow up to 56 units per acre in our low density residential zone. And that's on a lot by lot basis. It's basically saying that a fourplex would be allowed on a lot that's 150% of the minimum lot size for a single family home. So currently we allow a single family home on a 4,500 square foot lot. So that would allow a fourplex on a 6,750 square foot lot. And so again, on a lot by lot basis, that's the density we're talking about, which exceeds even our highest density residential. So that's kind of in a nutshell, the direction the state's going. I've been participating in these meetings, trying to make a case that we don't believe that the legislation gives them that authority to mandate cities require that level of density. They've pushed back on that. And that's, Christina and I were just alluding to that a little bit ago. I've asked her for more of a legal opinion on that. There are others on the committee and that have reached out to me that have the same concern, that think the state DLCD is exceeding their authority given to them in the legislation. But anyway, I wanted to update this committee and first of all get some feedback from the committee on that first question of is that it should staff be taking a position of being concerned about that? Because if we are, well, regardless, if that's the direction the state is going to go, the current draft residential code amendments that we've put out for public review will have to be revised considerably to address that direction from the state. We drafted the code based on this idea, kind of based on this map of how we thought it could be implemented based on statutory measures. And so that's kind of the first question. I'll turn it over to the committee for your discussion on it and provide me feedback. And just quickly before I do turn that over, I will be coming to both the entire city council for a work session on June 22nd and also the entire planning commission, I think at your first or second July meeting for an update and feedback. But again, we're gearing up to potentially testify in front of the LCDC, which is the commission that the LCD was under. They have their next meeting not till July 23rd, but again, we're just wanting to get our arms around this issue sooner than later and make you. So with that, I'll turn it over to you. Look, go ahead, Sophie.
So I've been attending all of the Rulemaking Advisory Committee and Technical Advisory Committee meetings, and I think I have a different understanding of the minimum standards than you have, so please correct me. But right now, my interpretation is that the minimum standards as currently written allow us to set minimum lot size for each housing type, so we would have control over minimum lot size, minimum lot width, and with the additional the additional minimum requirement of one parking spot per dwelling unit, that would rule out many, many lots. Like we could say that we want minimum lot size for each triplex to be 12,000 square feet, and that's not the same as single family residential. So essentially it would map, or it would match the map that you have up. Am I misinterpreting that?
So you're right. So there's two different things going on at these meetings. One is talking about a model code, and then two is, and so the model code would apply to jurisdictions that don't adopt a code, and that would be directly applicable. And then there's the minimum compliance standards that the DLC department would apply to cities that do adopt their own code. And figure out if their code meets the law. So currently the way the minimum compliance, so, and I don't know if you were just on the meeting on Monday listening in, they've left a blank currently in with an XX that needs to be filled in terms of what the minimum lot size is going to be. And what was discussed at this last meeting on Monday and will be discussed again next Tuesday, I think, at the Rules Advisory Committee, is that that blank for the minimum lot size should be filled in instead of a size, like a square footage number, should be filled in with a percentage number. So the percent of the minimum lot size for a single family home. And the percent discussed at the meeting was the 150% number. So you're right. I mean, it's not decided yet. My sense is the direction the department is going is to put a limit on it. And so we wouldn't be able to say 12,000. They would say that doesn't meet the minimum standards if that exceeds it. So that's my understanding of the direction. Does that differ? I mean, that it kind of, your understanding, I would say, is correct, but also where the number lands.
Yeah, whether they set that percentage or allow jurisdictions to decide that. I also saw that they were contemplating adding a maximum lot size. So I know that's up in the air. But otherwise, you know, where it lies currently, you know, I feel comfortable with it because it does match like our initial estimate for where things would go and how things would be evenly distributed. But yeah, definitely if you feel uncomfortable with the percentage, I would support staff voicing that.
So if I understand what you're saying correctly, that if they go with a, if they allow us to basically do what we've proposed, and that is say 12,000 square feet for a fourplex or 9,000 for a triplex, that would be okay. And I agree, that's how our draft code's drafted. That would be acceptable in my mind as well. But if they go towards a fourplex being allowed on 150% of the lot size, that would be a concern of yours as well that we should pursue?
I'm just not exactly sure how that would even fit given the minimum parking requirements that they're talking about right now. So like in theory, like, you know, if they could fit it, possibly. I mean, it depends on like what the city's view is for how stringent it's going to get. So if it does affect our maximum density allowed, then that is something that isn't clearly specified in the House bill. I know that there are other jurisdictions that are concerned with this as well. I'm working on the House Bill 2001 implementation project in Eugene. They're concerned about that, and I'll speak on behalf of them. But, I did see the League of Oregon Cities letter that I assume Springfield signed. So, you know, I think there's a general consensus among city leadership and staff that DLCD can overstep occasionally or doesn't have clear guidance for where they can step right now. So if you feel uncomfortable with that density increase, then I would support staff.
Yeah, thanks. So that sounds like we're talking about something. And I'll just, so Sophie referred to a League of Oregon Cities letter that went out. We did not sign onto the letter. We just didn't have the time to circulate it to leadership in order to put city's name on it. We did submit a letter from myself as staff to the department expressing some concerns separately prior to the League's letter. But we haven't, the League of Oregon Cities has also been conducting meetings with their member cities to try and keep their head around all the issues that are being talked about. I think that was it. So, Councillor Moe, I think you had your hand up, and then Commissioner Bergen.
I'm okay for now. Thank you.
All right, Commissioner Bergen.
Thank you. I would have to absolutely agree that I would support you in going and saying that I really think that is an overreach. In my line of work, I usually try and work in terms of acreage and what that looks like. And a lot of newer subdivisions, in my experience, not exclusively to you, to Springfield, but other metropolitan areas surrounding us, the lots are built on 0.11 of an acre. And doing quick calculation, this would be just almost 0.14. And similar to what Sophie said, I just don't see how it's even feasible to have a fourplex on something that of that size. And it is my opinion that if they are telling us that's going to be the minimum or that we have to allow that, I think that they are effectively reaching into each municipality and deciding the makeup of the community. And I think that's not, to my understanding, that's not their role. So I support you.
And I'll just say, it is true, I think, that practically speaking, it would be probably very difficult to put a fourplex on that small of a lot, especially as Sophie mentioned, parking is a requirement, potentially one space per unit. That's been another big topic of conversation is how many parking. Some interests are pushing for no required parking and think that the state addressing parking at all is an overreach. So it'll be interesting to see where the commission falls on that. And lastly, I'll just say the other big one is stormwater, especially for the city of Springfield. They have to put their stormwater on site to treat impervious surface areas. That can be a real restriction. The department has acknowledged that one of the things they're hoping and kind of pushing for through this is actually it will encourage smaller units. So, and kind of the number has been thrown out that say, you have a 2,800 square foot house that you could fit on a lot versus that same 2,800 square foot structure that has four units inside of it. So four 700 is up, yeah, 700 square foot units inside. So they think the department's theory is that they're trying to encourage smaller units to be developed. Anyway, so Councillor Van Gorp.
Supportive of the direction you guys are going, right? And I would support taking a very narrow reading about what they should make in the administrative rules about what the actual legislation says. I guess my position is that they need to leave as much flexibility up to the individual community. It really concerns me if there's conversations happening that they should be making policy that says like, hey, we need small, like, 700 square foot units, right? That's not really, you know, that's not really their role. And so I think those questions sort of matter, right? And we're keeping as much flexibility. We're gonna do the right thing towards doing it for Springfield, and Eugene needs to do it for Eugene, and everybody needs to do it for their own perspective. But like, if you're having conversations which start with, that's not how I read the bill, right? They work for the legislature, and the legislature work for the people. So I guess my take on it is I would read it relatively narrowly, which should give us as much flexibility as possible.
Great. Yeah, I agree. That's unfortunately not the view of, I would say, the department staff. And one of the LCDC commissioners is on the Rules Advisory Committee. She even stated, when I brought this issue up at the last RAC meeting, she specifically said she believes the Speaker of the House, Kotek, it is her intent with the legislation to mandate this density on cities. And again, I've pointed to different sections of the bill itself and asked how the department's justifying their position. They basically haven't responded and said they're taking their marching orders to make it happen. So again, we're going down this path. Go ahead.
I was going to say, courts have pretty consistently said that one legislator's intent, or even the entire legislature's, you know, legislative history and intent, does not override or overrule the plain text of the statute. And the plain text of the statute clearly has two different standards for duplexes and other middle housing. So the intent was to apply the same standard to triplexes and fourplexes as for duplexes. There would be no subsection A that talks about middle housing and subsection B that talks about duplexes. It would say the same thing for both sections. It would just say all middle housing is required on whatever words they want to use. So it clearly means two different things, because there's two different sections of text in the same exact section of statute. So it's not even one of those things where they wrote a statute over here and then way over here they wrote another statute and they really meant them to be the same, but they ended up using different words. It's like directly on top of one another, they use completely different words that means something different. So it doesn't really matter what the speaker intended or what individual members of the legislature intended, because what was adopted and passed, the text doesn't support that. And I think that's a pretty consistent city attorney take on what the legislation means. I've not heard city attorneys say they think that every lot is mandated to have a duplex. And I think that the media around the adoption of the bill hasn't said that either. So we would have had different news stories if the news was Oregon legislature allows a quadplex on every lot.
Yeah, and I think the legal argument's important. I also think the practical argument, because I see the math from the planning commissioners, they're going, I don't know how to make that actually fit, becomes really important. And then, we'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, great. It'll be interesting because, again, so we are gearing up to plan to testify in front of the commission when they have their hearing on this issue. We feel like we're not kind of being heard at the staff level at the RAC and TAC meetings. The department's basically sounds like they're going to recommend what they're going to recommend. We're not working towards a consensus or anything, or a majority committee recommendation. Basically, we're all providing input and staff is doing what they want to do anyway. And I've also pointed that out to them. And so, because some of the wording they even have in their reports seem to kind of allude to this is a recommendation from the committee, and I wanted to point out that it's not. But anyway, that's all good feedback. And really the kind of feedback I was hoping to get, just making sure we're going the right direction. We're, trying to stay in close attune with this thing as possible. It's changing daily. I just received, I think today or yesterday, the 156 page meeting packet for the Rules Advisory Committee. That's next Monday or Tuesday. And I noticed in that packet, and I'll probably forward this to Christina too, it's germane to the question I asked her earlier via email, but so they're working on defining, and Christina was just kind of alluding to this, the how the triplexes and fourplexes will be allowed in areas is the language that's used in the legislation. So now they have a four or five page memo that they're working on trying to define what the legislation means by in areas. And so that will potentially be another way to control where the density goes, but basically it has to do with goal protected areas like floodplain probably, or historic areas or wetlands, but then also the infrastructure constrained areas. And we haven't been tracking the part of the bill as closely that there's an infrastructure component to the legislation where cities can ask for a delay of implementation if we can't provide the infrastructure, but it basically forces us to come up with an infrastructure plan to figure out how to serve those areas and build it within a certain time frame. Now they're kind of doing this, I don't know, squishy language of, it's not the full-blown infrastructure deficient area, which is in the legislation, but now they're one step down from that. They're saying, well, you can have infrastructure constrained areas, and that doesn't require this exception, but it could identify areas where you don't have to allow the density yet. Anyway, it gets, every time a new packet comes out, it gets more complicated, and they're trying to piece these things all together. But I just wanted to update this group, give some initial feedback, get you prepped for your upcoming work sessions so you can be thinking about it, and as well as once I get to you, both the entire council and the entire planning commission, we can have a more updated conversation and hopefully get some additional direction. But since we've started going down this path of engaging with the department, I wanted to make sure I wasn't off base in representing the city as a whole and how we do that. Sounds like I'm okay from the standpoint of this committee, which is good. Any other thoughts or ideas, Councilor Moe? No. Sophie, go ahead.
Did the city apply for DLCD assistance for implementation of the bill?
We have not yet. And let me make sure I'm speaking correctly about that. No, we have not yet. I think, you know, Sandy is on the Technical Advisory Committee for the Housing Production Strategy. And now I take that back. So we did, I believe, apply for assistance for helping develop the housing production strategy. So
okay.
So that piece we have applied for, and I think we've received it as well. Sandy's been tracking that more closely, so I'm not as up to speed on it. So the second part of the conversation, and I'm just going to flip back, I think, to the agenda really quick to do a quick check-in, but kind of the second question. So we're kind of through agenda item three. I know we skipped over public comment. There's nobody on this call today that's from the public that I don't recognize. So, but really the discussion of the project timeline and potential adjustments, that has to do with, depending on this direction, part of the concern is that the draft residential code that is out to the public today could potentially have to be changed based on the conversation we just had, depending on the ultimate rules that get adopted by LCDC. So we have been in kind of a holding pattern on the residential code because our next step was to do further public engagement with the community. Our original plan was to hold a big community open house, and obviously because of COVID, we're not able to have that big kind of public open house gathering. Then we were moving down the path of working either with our internal public relations staff and or potentially engaging with LCOG to have them assist us with conducting a big virtual open house, an online open house where we could engage the community that way. And initially LCOG thought they could help us with that. It turns out at this point they really don't have that capacity or capability. So we're reevaluating our ability in-house to host and conduct a virtual open house like that. I don't know if any of you have seen or tracked the Main Street project. There's a virtual open house that's pretty well done on that project. Since that's a larger project and involves ODOT, there has been funding associated with that that has hired a third-party private consultant to prepare and host that online open house. So we don't have that funding capacity yet on this project at this point. So again, we're pursuing whether or not how to do that public outreach. But now with kind of some of the perceived direction on these rules from the state, we're holding off on doing even that virtual open house engagement to determine whether now's the right time to do that engagement based on the current draft code, if that draft code has to change significantly to address the state rules, then it may be a waste and we may do it later. So part of the question for this committee related to all this timing then is, and we've talked about this before, and the direction was, let's try and adopt a residential code that is compliant with the new legislation and do it ahead of schedule. We knew we were kind of out in front, and we knew we may have to make some adjustments along the way or after the fact, come back and do some cleanup even after we adopt, because we will have some time once, if we stay on relative close track with where we're at and what our schedule was, we will have our residential code adopted well before the requirement of June, I think 30th, 2021. So we still have, 2 years from basically right now to adopt a residential code. So the point is we could still move forward with the residential code, maybe not be fully compliant with the legislation, and then come back and tweak it later to be compliant with the legislation, depending on what rules play out. Or kind of pause, wait, maybe align the housing code with the commercial phase that we've already started, and I can give you a quick update on that as well. But so part of the feedback I'm looking for is, continue to stay on track, kind of keep plotting the course. And the feedback I get from you today won't be, I don't think, definitive or final. Again, when I engage the entire council, I think that'll be a more definitive direction. We'll know more, a little bit more by another couple of weeks. But given all this kind of swirling out there that we're trying to put it together and make it work, should we still be continuing full speed down the path of the residential path and then adjust as necessary later, or kind of pause and adjust now? So any thoughts or feedback on any of that kind of timing stuff would be appreciated. And Commissioner Bergen.
My first question, I guess, would be, do we know, is there an estimated time frame for when the draft rules for House Bill 2001 would be in, to where we would have to adjust our where we're going? And if it comes in after we've already worked through it, it would it be major adjustments or something that we can just go back and make minor tweaks to things we've already made?
So the first part of the question is when we would expect draft rules. So they anticipate the LCDC, the commission, having a public hearing on these draft rules for the large cities at their fall meeting, which I think, I can't remember if it's September or October. So their draft rules would be, made public a month or probably so before that. So we'll know by August, say, in another month and a half or two, where the draft rule recommendation from the department that it's going to go to public hearing at the commission, where they'll land. So we'll know within a month and a half or two what the draft rules say. So, again, it's kind of that delay. It's not a huge delay, but it's enough of a delay from where we're hoping to be. I mean, we were hoping to be in front of the planning commission in July with work sessions on the draft code moving towards a public hearing for adoption and have our residential code adopted by the end of the calendar year. So it may be only a delay of a couple months, but it becomes kind of a snowball effect. And let's see, the second part of your question was how big of an adjustment? I think based on my reading of the direction the department's likely to go right now, kind of maybe worst case scenario, is that it would be pretty major adjustments that we would have to kind of, you know, in previous work sessions with you, I've presented ideas about how much design we want, how many design requirements or standards we wanted to have for these middle housing types. And we were taking a pretty hands-off approach, saying, no, we're going to be light touch on any kind of design. We'll just let the market regulate as long as we're regulating by the map I had up earlier, the lot sizes on where they can go. And so in my mind, it would potentially be flipping that a little bit, because again, that's kind of the direction the department at the state is going to, is they want to allow these things everywhere and then have a little bit even more heavy-handed design standards in terms of how they're built and what they look like. So it's kind of the opposite approach that we've presented in our code. And so that would require some pretty major redrafting of the draft code we have put out for public review at this point.
Well, I think all things considered, you know, our community is understanding of this COVID crisis that we're in the middle of. And it is my opinion that all things considered, even though we would have a little bit of a snowball effect of the delay, that it would be better to pause and get the definitive information instead of working towards something that is not what they're envisioning and what they're deciding they're going to do. Even if we are a little bit behind, I think it'd be easier to get that information, implement it as soon as we can, and then present it to the public instead of them coming back and saying, you know, well, this is different, completely different than what we were presented as a draft. So it's my opinion that I think as soon as we receive the draft rules to at that point, then continue forward, to just pause for a minute.
Great, thank you. Councilor Van Gordon.
I agree. I think people are would struggle with seeing the material more than one time, right? And like their clarity about having the conversation in the community would be impacted. I don't want to wait. And I also don't, you know, want the draft rules to sort of take us away from what our goals want to be. But like, I think if we go back out, we're just going to create nothing but rework and confusion in a place where we want to create clarity.
Sophie, did you have something?
Yeah, I also think we should wait, but I don't think that waiting means that there doesn't need to be messaging right now. So I think it's important to let the community know, like, House Bill 2001 is coming. We're going to, you know, we're going to meet its requirements, and that means things are going to look different. Like right now, the DLCD is establishing rules. Here's where you can watch those happen. You know, I watched all of the department budget videos on YouTube, and I loved that. Like, it's not super high tech, but it's, you know, it's the city being really transparent with its community members. So I think even starting to talk about, like, what is a triplex? What is a fourplex? What's a cottage cluster? Like, here's what staff is doing right now. Like, nobody's just sitting around like on their hands. Like, the RAC meetings are like 3.5 hours long. Like, that's a lot of staff work to be doing, and you're keeping up with it. So let them know that things are happening, and, you know, what the timeline is and what there is to expect. And then also, like, where they can direct their voices if they want to be involved right now with the DLCD process.
Great, thanks. Councilor Mo, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I don't think we should get in a position where we have to redo something. So being cautiously going forward would be the reasonable way to go.
Great. That's all good input. I think it's pretty consistent looking at, you know, probably slowing down a little bit, trying to make sure we get it right. And then also but also get it right for Springfield. And so I agree. I think that's probably the best route. And I think we can do that fairly easily. You know, the draft code that is out to the public now, we haven't really gotten much, if any, feedback on. I agree with Commissioner McGinley that we can do a better job of some messaging. Our public relations staff has been a little bit overtaxed with everything that's going on. So I've been trying to work with them closely. It's just with COVID and a lot of other stuff, the priority, even though this is a high priority project, some of it falls down a little bit on the priority list. So we're still working on that. I think there's opportunity to combine some of the virtual open house with the residential stuff once we do get it correctly, even if we just pause for a month and a half or two, and then potentially combine with some of the work we're doing on the commercial phase. And just so to give you a quick update of what we're doing on phase two, the employment lands, commercial industrial, I have convened our local technical advisory committee on that phase. We are getting ready to have a second meeting. What I'm calling the low-hanging fruit opportunity to do the first audit of our existing code is our minimum development standards, and really clean those up again from where they were cleaned up a number of years ago, but create a true, we've talked about a lot of clear and objective standards. We're required by state law to have those for housing. We're not required by state law to have clear and objective standards for commercial industrial development, but we're looking at the opportunity, regardless of having a clear and objective path in the minimum development standards path for commercial industrial development that is essentially clear and objective and could be kind of a fast track process for a more well-defined subset of certain types of development if it meets. It's more smaller scale. It's not huge, big new development. But so that's the first step in the commercial industrial work we're doing, is working on cleaning up our minimum development standards. You know, depending on how we come out of all this pandemic stuff and hopefully try and rebound fairly quickly, I think having a path for commercial industrial development to happen fairly easily and quickly in a clear and objective way could be beneficial. And then the next step, and so again, we may even potentially consider phasing the employment land phase. So phase two is a pretty big chunk, all the employment land sections of the code. But say if we're just able to tack on the minimum development standard cleanup part, say with residential, and adopt that as a quick fix to have that in our code while we're continuing to revise the other sections of the commercial industrial code, that may be an opportunity. So the next step, though, is we're looking at the entire site plan review process for anything that wouldn't fit the minimum development standards. And, just going down that path of all the commercial stuff. So we'll look for opportunities for efficiencies in the process to combine virtual open houses and the public's review of the code and that sort of stuff, if that sounds good. Any feedback or comments on that? Thumbs up, looks good. All right, well, that's where we're at. That's pretty much all I had. Any other questions? I just double check here. Again, there's no public, so I don't think we need to do any public comment. I've kind of already given you an update on next steps. Those next steps are being in front of the entire city council at a work session at the June 22nd meeting. That packet will be going out, I think, towards end of next week. And then trying to get, originally I was scheduled to come to the entire planning commission. I think it was the June 16th meeting, which was going to be after the city council work session, because it was originally scheduled for city council June 9th. I got bumped on that date, so I'm bumping the planning commission date to July, but I'll get that scheduled and hopefully in front of the entire planning commission as well. So those are next steps. And again, I'm kind of gearing up. We'll be engaging with Christina more on our position on how we think the state's doing with their rules, and probably likely in my mind, be prepared to testify in front of the LCDC, the commission, on their rulemaking hearing. We've briefed Tom, Sandy, and I met virtually with the new city manager, Nancy Newton, and brought her up to speed on this project in general, but also some of these issues that we've talked about today. So she's in the loop and aware of where we're going, what's going on. So I appreciate all your time. That's all I really had. So unless there's anything else, we can cut out here a little bit early.
Mark, I just want to say thank you so much for all the work you've put into this. I know it's not, it's a little labor intensive and a lot of meetings. So thank you so much. We definitely appreciate everything you do for us.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to have Sophie's input too from a perspective. Sometimes it's also tracking it from a different perspective. There's a lot going on as she can attest.
This stuff looks good so far. So thanks for hanging in there and trying to get it done in 2020, which is an accomplishment unto itself.
Yeah. Mark, you're the best.
I don't know about that. Thank you. Well, you guys, you know, it has been an interesting year so far, and we're only about halfway through. So hopefully the second half's better than the first, and we'll just keep getting stuff done. You all stay well, and thanks for your involvement.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. Bye.